You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 18th of October, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we have our new Chancellor of the Exchequer in Britain, and it's Jeremy Hunt, a man detested by the public and who now appears to be leading the government rather than Liz Truss. She's appeared on a few interviews since then, and basically everything that she planned to put in place has been completely removed. And anybody watching this should really understand that these politicians cannot be responsible for anything. If you think about it, Liz Truss came in and she brought in Kwasi Kwarteng as the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Now, I'm not sure what he was doing before he was Chancellor of the Exchequer, but I don't think it was anything to do with the economy. Now, he comes in and within 2 weeks, he brings out this mini budget. And it can't have been all his thinking. I mean, it has to have been handed to him by the civil service, or how else could they just swap people around like this? So he brings in his budget, mini budget. Everybody complains about it. So Liz Truss sacks him, and straight away we get Jeremy Hunt. She puts Jeremy Hunt in there, and within 24 hours, Jeremy Hunt has come up with a completely new mini budget. Now, Jeremy Hunt came in there from the NHS, is what he was responsible for before. The NHS has got nothing to do with the economy. What is the skill set that you would have for the NHS? It's clearly not going to be the same as the skill set for the economy. So how did Jeremy Hunt come up with this new budget within 24 hours? Well, it can only have been because the civil servants handed it to him. And if the civil servants handed it to him, they must have done exactly the same with Kwasi Kwarteng. They must have just handed him something and he was just a front man for it. So why weren't the civil servants sacked as well as Kwasi Kwarteng? I mean, democracy, this version of democracy that we have has to be the most ridiculous way of governing I've ever heard of. I mean, it's the equivalent of putting a postman in to do a farmer's job, or putting in a teacher in to do the job of a prison master. I mean, surely you've got to know something about the subject, something about the trade, before you are actually leading the department for that. But apparently, no, they just expect to play musical chairs, put people in there to be the front man, and that is all they are. They're just the spokesman that relays what is being done to the public. And somebody said to me the other day, well, what it is they get put in there, and then the civil servants present them with a choice, and they say, well, you can do this, you can do either A, B, or C, and the politician is responsible for making that choice. But again, surely you would have to know something about that part of the economy or that trade. Surely you would have to have some education in it in order to make the right choice. And this is why we see that this Kwasi Kwarteng's budget was slammed by everyone. But apparently this was Liz Truss's proposal of what she was going to do once she got into government, and the Conservative Party members all voted for her because this is what they wanted. And it's now all been undone, and apparently Jeremy Hunt is the de facto leader of the Conservative Party. Well, I've got a report here to discuss which talks about this. It's from Breitbart. The last vestiges of the Liz Truss era were swept away Monday morning, even as she still officially remained in power by Jeremy Hunt, officially Britain's new finance minister, but as increasingly widely thought, the de facto leader. And Liz Truss also didn't turn up for in Parliament. She was missing when the Shadow Chancellor wanted to ask questions, and Penny Mordaunt was there instead of Liz Truss. And it was remarked that, where is Liz Truss? Oh, she's hiding. She's hiding because she can't face the public. And when Liz Truss is being interviewed, she's just coming out with pre-prepared statements. I mean, the BBC asked her three, or it was on the BBC, questions of the Prime Minister the other day. And I think they had three different journalists ask her questions, and she effectively gave the same answer to all three of them, just a pre-prepared statement. Exactly the same as she gave Sergei Lavrov when she was Foreign Secretary, what she was mocked for just giving these pre-prepared statements in answers and not being able to actually have a conversation with anyone. But this is what we've been left with. I mean, who would have guessed that we would end up with Jeremy Hunt as the de facto Prime Minister? Speaking in a fleeting 5-minute and 20-second briefing from Westminster on Monday morning, Jeremy Hunt, appointed as Chancellor of the Exchequer, the UK's finance minister position, but evidently now leading the government, briskly ran through the few remaining elements of the government programme of Prime Minister Liz Truss, announcing that all of them would be scrapped or severely curtailed. Liz Truss became Prime Minister 42 days ago, selected by her party in a torturously long leadership election, on a platform of cutting taxes and regulation to get the economy growing, hence short-circuiting the coming recession and seeing the UK outgrowing its competitors abroad. However, when these policies were actually announced, including some tax cuts, cancellation of planned tax rises and an enormous bailout programme intended to shield UK consumers from anticipated soaring energy prices this winter, Truss and her then-Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng were immediately dismissed as cranks. This is what the Conservative Party members voted for. And they're talking about now, they're still going to try and help with the energy prices, but that's going to stop in April. And who is Jeremy Hunt to just reverse all of this? Who is he taking his orders from? That's the question. Apparently he's brought in an advisor that is from BlackRock. So we now have a BlackRock infiltration at the government level here. 2 weeks of angry noises from the fiscal establishment and UK media saw Truss fire her right-hand man Kwarteng and drop some key policies, but this apparently has not been enough. Announcing the dismantling of the Truss programme for growth, Hunt said the Prime Minister had listened and had agreed to cancel the cuts to corporation tax, a tax on the income of businesses, amongst other things. He said, "Firstly, we will reverse almost all the tax measures announced in the growth plan 3 weeks ago. We will no longer be proceeding with the cut to dividend tax rates, the reversal of off-payroll working reforms, the new VAT-free shopping scheme for non-UK visitors, or the freeze on alcohol duty rates." So they basically just undid everything that Liz Truss has done. So people are just talking about her being a ghost prime minister. She's not actually responsible for anything. But what is it they are responsible for if all they are is spokesmen for what they're told to say? Clearly, Jeremy Hunt has been told to say all this by somebody. Who is it? Is it the civil service? Surely, if it was the civil service that were telling Kwasi Kwarteng what to say, it should be the civil service that all got the sack. I mean, all he is a frontman. Again, this has to be the most ridiculous example of democratic principles that anybody could dream up. Abolition of the health and social care levy and a cut to stamp duty survived Hunt's purge. So there are only two things that actually survived what they're calling Hunt's purge here, but clearly it isn't. I mean, what does he know about the economy? Why is he in there? I mean, he was really hated by the general public, and he's just been put in there as this as the person that's right at the very top now. There was a big dinner the other day, big Conservative Party dinner, where all the donors normally end up bidding for a raffle and giving lots of money to the Conservative Party, and nobody gave any money. They said, "Well, we can't give money to Liz Truss because she's no good at what she's actually doing. We don't want to give them money." So it looks like this is something to do with it, is that these Conservative Party donors are not paying the government any money at all. And you would think that the government would be run on money that was taken from the country, not from donors, because obviously the government are then going to be likely to be carrying out policies that these donor that are going to please these donors, rather than doing what's best for the nation or what's best for the country. While giving a lip service to the importance of tax cuts for ordinary working people, Hunt nevertheless said the extremely modest, one penny in the pound, cut to basic rate income tax paid by millions of ordinary Britons would be cancelled indefinitely. These measures will take a further £32 billion from individuals and businesses a year, Hunt said. So they're taking money away from the poorest people in society here. I mean, I know it's not much, but I'm sure there must have been some people that were pleased with this, that are glad that they're going to be paying slightly less income tax. The flagship policy of the Truss government was a major subsidy to energy prices for homes and businesses starting this winter, a cushion for the blow of a deeply volatile energy price market. That this won't be scrapped is not a surprise. After all, countries across Europe are instituting very similar packages of support, but it will be curtailed. Rather than lasting 2 years, the support will now end in April. So from April onwards, everybody is going to be paying these massive increases in price for their electricity. And of course, nobody's talking about, well, we have to make peace in Ukraine, and then hopefully all this might stabilise. I mean, they're talking about this continuing on for years. I mean, I can see that there will be civil unrest because of the cost of living here. Warning that changes would not end at cancelling tax cuts now, Hunt said there were actually tax rises on the horizon. He said there will be more difficult decisions, I'm afraid, on both tax and spending, as we deliver our commitment to get debt falling as a share of the economy over the medium term. Again, who is it he is taking his instructions from? Because this cannot just be his ideas that have just come to him in the last 24 hours since he's been parachuted in as Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's now come out with all these ideas that are going to solve all these problems. Who is it that is giving him these ideas, telling him what to say? Now her entire government programme has been disassembled. The question remains, what is left for Prime Minister Liz Truss in government? If she resigns now or in the coming weeks, Truss will be the shortest serving UK Prime Minister ever. Even those previous short reigns that went before were caretakers or single parts of considerably longer periods of government, punctuated by periods in opposition. And just think about it, a couple of years ago, the Conservative Party had the biggest majority that they've had in decades. They had this great red wall that fell down in North Wales and elsewhere. All these constituencies that have been voting Labour for years all voted Conservative because they all supported Boris Johnson. And whatever you say about Johnson, he did have charisma. He did have character. And now they're just falling apart. They're basically just handing it all over to the Labour Party. I mean, people are saying, well, bring back Boris. I don't think the general public wanted Boris Johnson to go anyway. That was who they voted in. And that meant that we had a Brexiteer leading the government. This is another side of this now. Now we have Remainers in the government. Liz Truss was a Remainer. Jeremy Hunt was a Remainer. So they basically hijacked the government, turned it around. So instead of it being Brexiteers, it's now all these people that wanted to stay in the EU. And of course, Liz Truss has signed us up to this defensive EU pact thing, which is essentially the same as being a part of the EU, but just with the military side of it. What appears to be clear is that while Truss bears the official office of Prime Minister, she is no longer calling the shots. Well, she can't have been calling the shots anyway. None of them could have been calling the shots. They're all just spokesmen. Otherwise, you couldn't just parachute these people into these positions and expect them to be able to do the job. They have alluded to this themselves, with Downing Street spokesmen referring to Truss as the chairman of a company and Hunt as the chief executive. Somehow, somebody has said, well, Jeremy Hunt needs to be in charge and we're going to put him in charge, regardless of the way that the Conservative Party voted, regardless of the way that the country voted when they put Boris Johnson in there. You know, if we stood by and allowed them to just get rid of Boris Johnson, even though the vote of no confidence said that he does have confidence, and all these MPs then just stabbed him in the back because the media kept making this huge fuss about him, and we stood for that. So now they just think that they can do whatever they like. They can put Jeremy Hunt in there if we end up voting for Liz Truss. So Roger Gale, described as a senior Tory by the Daily Telegraph, has put the new situation into the starkest terms possible. remarking that Jeremy Hunt is now the de facto leader of the United Kingdom, with the Prime Minister reduced to the status of a puppet. Well, they're all puppets, aren't they, if they can be moved from one position to another and within 24 hours come out with a completely different budget to the one that was there before. While it is evident that a certain number of Conservative members of Parliament want Truss to go, a clearly larger number seems to recognise that yet another leadership competition so close to the next UK general election would sign the party's death warrant. And it may be that she resigns, and it may be that then they just put Jeremy Hunt in, or it may be that they actually call a general election. I mean, which would be absolutely disastrous for the Conservative Party. And you think they've gone from this huge majority to having a tiny percentage of the population is supporting them now. Masses more people in the opinion polls are supporting the Labour Party. Whether Hunt emerges as Prime Minister now or remains the de facto leader behind the Truss puppet, there are longer-term questions of his legitimacy. Puppet governments are not exactly known in the United Kingdom, and his two previous attempts to become leader, Hunt has been categorically rejected by both his parliamentary colleagues and the wider Conservative Party in the country. If he completes this coup, who will Hunt claim to represent? So Parliament didn't want him, the Conservative Party didn't want him, Conservative Party voters didn't want him because he was on the ticket for the for leader, and he was knocked out in the first round. I think he got the lowest number of support, and yet he is being put in there as this de facto leader who is riding in on his horse to save the day, just to save the government. It's all absolutely scandalous what's going on here. The way that they got rid of Boris Johnson, the choices that people were given, and then to put somebody like Liz Truss in, who's obviously not experienced enough to actually be a prime minister. But I mean, the fact that she's been put in there just shows that you don't have to have any experience. All you have to do is do what you're told to do, and take the rap for it if it fails. Because the civil servants gave Kwasi Kwarteng told him what he had to do. He did what he was told, and he was the one that gets the sack, and yet the civil servants are all still there. And now they come out with this completely new plan for Jeremy Hunt just within a matter of hours of him actually being in there. I mean, it really should wake people up to the way that our democracy is run and how it's all hidden. The people that are actually really calling the shots are all hidden, and all these politicians is just spokesmen, people that have been selected to break the news to the public, basically. And of course, none of them are talking about immigration, which is the main issue that people are most concerned about. Moving on to the next news item we have here. The UK has been accepting asylum claims from foreign migrants at a far higher rate than countries within the EU, a factor which may be contributing to the massive migrant crisis currently being experienced by the state. And of course, everybody voted Brexit thinking, well, if we vote to leave the EU, then they'll finally do something about immigration. And when the public were polled and they were saying, well, why are you voting for Brexit? Most people said, well, we're concerned about immigration. We're concerned about protecting our borders. And what has actually happened since we've left the EU is that we're probably the leading country in Europe for accepting asylum claims. Compared to the likes of Sweden, you know, the great humanitarian superpower that lets anybody in, compared to the likes of Sweden, France and Germany, the United Kingdom has been accepting asylum claims made by migrants at a far higher rate, despite many of these illegals entering Britain from a safe country. They're all entering Britain from a safe country. They're all coming in from France, which is not at war. They've travelled through numerous countries before they get to France. Over 36,000 migrants have entered Britain via small boats this year, with many more also arriving in the country via Ireland or by overstaying their visas. Itself a silent migrant crisis of many years standing, with the UK Border Force now warning that the influx represents a national security risk to the UK. And they're the ones that are actually bringing these people in. They arrange for the lifeboat to bring them in, the Border Force itself brings them in, and then they say, well, it's actually representing a national security risk to the UK, all these people that we're bringing in. Why are you bringing them in? Why are you not taking them off to a safe third country like Rwanda, like the plan that the government had? Why is that still being held up in the courts? That's what they should be doing. They should be just taking them straight to Rwanda Rwanda wants them. They want people that are economic migrants. They want people to set up businesses in Rwanda. That would be the best idea. Why are they even bringing them ashore when they've broken into the country? It's just the same as if somebody trespassed, broke into your house, and then you just gave them your bed and you gave them your food, and you said, "Oh yeah, you can stay here." You wouldn't do that, would you? You would defend your house against somebody that was trying to break in and take your food, or try and take over your house, basically. What's more, the UK is even accepting a large number of asylum claims from people fleeing perfectly safe countries, with a plurality of migrants coming to the country on small boats originating from Albania, which, while it does have problems with systemic corruption and criminal gangs, is not in any active conflicts and sees a relatively low level of state-sponsored discrimination. And I think they actually make up the majority of the people that are coming in on these boats are now people from Albania, so from a completely safe country that's actually a part of Europe. Despite this, the UK accepts 52% of migrants from Albania as asylum seekers. This is compared to only 8% in France and 0% in both Germany and Sweden. So people think that Germany and Sweden are worse with asylum seekers, but no, Britain is far worse. 52% of Albanians that come into the country and claim asylum actually get given asylum. The rest of Europe thinks our system has been nuts, a UK Home Office insider is reported as telling the Times, with the publication noting research as finding that high acceptance rates for migrants often leads to increased levels of future migration. Well, of course it does. If they hear that Britain is a soft touch, it's easy to get in there. If you get in there, they're not going to fail your asylum claim. You have a 1 in 2 chance of getting asylum. And if you don't get asylum, you can always disappear because they're not going to deport you as soon as you get in. I mean, that's just going to act as a huge magnet to people to come to Britain. There are almost no cases of state persecution or persecution from government institutions in Albania, the source continued. Protection can be provided in Albania, whether for asylum or modern slavery claims. So these people should just be sent to Albania to claim their asylum. The discrepancy between UK acceptance rates for migrants compared with those on the European continent has been met with outrage online, with Brexit firebrand Nigel Farage taking aim at authorities for the high acceptance rates. "We accept nearly everyone," the former Brexit Party leader wrote online. "Britain is the dumping ground of the world." And Nigel Farage has actually been saying some good things recently. He's been pointing out the fact that this problem that we had with the Muslims and the Hindus fighting one another is a problem that had been imported by every government since the Tony Blair government, and he places the blame for all these problems that multiculturalism has caused directly at the feet of the politicians, which is, of course, what we do here at Radio Albion. They're the ones that are to blame for all of these issues. Nevertheless, attempts by UK authorities to get a handle on the crisis have failed abysmally, with attempts to see arrivals sent to Rwanda in order to allow them to claim asylum there, instead of being completely neutralised by the UK and European courts. So this is being held up in the courts. Suella Braverman has said that she wants to do something about this. She wants to pull us out of the European Court of Human Rights, but I doubt very much whether that is going to happen. And we have all our legal aid is actually getting spent on these asylum claims, whereas if somebody breaks into your house, they couldn't then say, "Well, I was hoping you were going to look after me. I was fleeing from trouble from this other house that I'd also just broken into." They would be in trouble for breaking into the house, surely, wouldn't they? They would be a housebreaker looking to create a burglary or a home invasion, as they say in America. You have the same thing that's going on here in Britain with people breaking into the country, and we're not even allowed to deport them to Rwanda. And in France, they just get given a tent. They won't get given anything in Hungary. But over here in Britain, we end up putting them up in hotels. We don't even put our own homeless up in hotels. Meanwhile, legal immigration into Britain has hit a record high under the Conservative Party, largely driven by new arrivals coming from outside the European Union. And this is what everybody said, or what a lot of knowledgeable people said about Brexit. They said, well, what a lot of these people that are calling for Brexit, the politicians like UKIP and like Nigel Farage, what they're actually calling for is no more immigration from the European Union, but immigration from the Commonwealth, which means non-whites. And that is what has happened here, largely driven by new arrivals coming from outside the European Union. And that's the legal immigration. So people of a completely different ethnicity to Europeans that can't be integrated, can they? They are their own nation. They are their own people that they make up. And yet we bring them over here and we tell them they're a British citizen. And we're told that they suddenly have loyalty to Britain, when of course the logical way to be is to have loyalty to your ancestors. Obviously their ancestors are going to come first, and I mean that is the right way to be. So you end up with a country that is filled with different competing people groups that are all competing for power. Instead of the country all pulling in one direction, it's all pulling itself apart. And this is what we see happening all around us, with numbers originating from the Indian subcontinent being especially high. The legal migrant surge has been linked by some critics to sectarian tensions within Britain, including the recent riots in cities across England. And again, it's the government that are responsible for all these legal migrants coming in, particularly the Indians, the Indian students who get given their visas. And with those student visas, they're allowed to bring their family over as well. So for each student, you end up with four or five other Indians that come over with them. It's not all doom and gloom, though. At least it is doom and gloom in Britain at the moment, but it's not all doom and gloom in Sweden. Long-time left-ruled Sweden has a new prime minister, with moderate party leader Ulf Kristersson elected by the country's parliament as prime minister after a coalition agreement between the centre-right parties was reached last week. Kristersson became Sweden's new prime minister on Monday by a vote of 176 to 173, with no abstentions, and is expected to present his new government on Tuesday. The election of Kristersson comes despite his centre-right party placing third behind the populist Sweden Democrats in last month's election. And of course, it should be the Sweden Democrats that have the prime minister of the coalition, but because they are right-wing and civic nationalists, they've been overlooked, and the party that actually came in third have been given the prestige of being the prime minister. It feels big. I'm grateful. I'm happy about the confidence I have received from the Riksdag, but also visibly humbled by the tasks that lie ahead, Kristersson said following the vote. The election of Prime Minister Kristersson comes after the coalition of the moderates, the Sweden Democrats, the Christian Democrats, and the Liberals reached a governing agreement known as the Tidö Agreement last week, broadcaster SVT reports. So it's a right-wing and centre coalition. Under the Tidö Agreement, the new government will seek major reforms in several areas, including immigration, and seek to withdraw residency permits in certain cases, deport people involved in criminal organisations or extremist organisations, and tighten the rules around gaining Swedish citizenship. Well, this is all good, isn't it? The new government will also investigate problems linked to labour migration and launch an investigation into whether new migrants to Sweden should automatically be granted social benefits. Of course they shouldn't be. If they haven't actually paid anything into the society, then they shouldn't be taking the social benefits from it. On crime, the Kristersson government will look to double the sentences for crimes linked to criminal gangs and look into deporting gang criminals without Swedish citizenship, even if they have not been convicted of crimes. So if they just have people that they know are linked to gangs and they're in Sweden and they're not actually of Swedish ethnicity, they will be deported. You would have thought that they would be deported anyway. A ban on living in certain areas will also be proposed for those convicted of crimes related to gang activity, honour crimes, domestic violence and extremism. But isn't that going to cause problems? I mean, if what they're saying there is they don't want these ghettos, they don't want all the people of one ethnic group living together in one place, especially if a large number of that ethnic group are involved in crimes, well, where else are they going to put them? They will end up putting them in white people's areas, I should imagine, although I hope that's not what this idea is. The new proposals come as Sweden has seen its worst ever year for fatal gun violence, with the previous fatal shooting record being broken in August. The majority of cases are linked to criminal gang activity, with many of the gang criminals coming from migrant backgrounds. In fact, all the leaders of the gangs come from migrant backgrounds. And I think it's something like 90% of the assassins that have been shooting people also come from the migrant backgrounds. We've had a look at this already on the Daily Nationalist. Sweden's National Police Chief Anders Thornberg admitted in January of this year that migration and integration failures have contributed to the issue of violent criminal gangs, saying it is based on a number of different factors: a sharp increase in demand for drugs, accelerated technological development and digitalization, increased migration, and lack of integration. So he's being very diplomatic there, bringing up all these other things that have added to this problem, this crime problem that multiculturalism seems to bring, wherever the multiculturalism is. Although you don't really seem to get it in Singapore, but then the multiculturalism in Singapore is mainly Chinese, Malay, Hong Kongese, Japanese, maybe some Indian. It's predominantly Chinese over there. And of course, the Chinese have a higher average IQ. I think Singapore has the highest IQ in the world. They have a higher average IQ. If you have a higher average IQ, then that people group is not likely to carry out so much crime. If you have a people group with a low average IQ, then they do tend to commit more crimes. And of course, if you have multiculturalism that involves the large numbers of these groups, then you are going to get an increase in crime, as well as the fact that it's always easier to, if you're a criminal, it's always going to be easier for you to pick a victim that is a member of a different ethnic group. Because if they're a member of your own ethnic group, the chances are that you are going to have to pay for that crime. Your ethnic group is going to know who you are, for a start. So multiculturalism just brings increased crime. So it's good that the Sweden Democrats have got in. It's good that they've managed to form this coalition, because there were fears that they would force them out. They did so well in the election, coming in second. So now we have, as a part of this agreement, they're going to have immigration reform, deport people involved in crime, hopefully prevent people from getting benefits as soon as they get there. And possibly things could start looking up in Sweden. So good news from Sweden, not so good from Britain. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.